and you're on the front porch. This week, we're going to talk about President Trump's executive orders and how they might affect the Affordable Care Act and people here on the ground in West Virginia. We have with us Kara Lofton. She's the coordinator of Appalachia Health News. Very excited to hear from her. Support for the Front Porch comes from the Charleston Gazette Mail, using its CGM app to deliver the latest in news, traffic, and weather. Check it out at iTunes or Google Play. I'm Scott Finn, Grand Poobah here with Rick Wilson. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Scott.
Of the American Friends Service Committee. Sadly, Lori is not here this week.
Actually, I understand she's getting ready to undergo astronaut training, and it's going to be a rather protracted gig for her. So
okay.
Yeah.
And we have with us, as I said, Kara Lofton, Appalachia Health News. Hey, Kara. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start with the basics here. President Trump had a couple of executive orders, one of which would eliminate subsidies to insurance companies that help to pay for these plans on the Affordable Care Act exchanges. Here in West Virginia, for example, Highmark Insurance and CareSource are the two main providers on the exchanges. Highmark says that they will be raising their premiums on average by about 26%, CareSource by about 19%. It would have been lower had it not been for the threat of losing these subsidies. Highmark said it would have been like 10% lower. 19,000 people in West Virginia are affected by this, according to your reporting. $1,200 a year is how much more they'll pay?
It is 19,000 people, but it is a fairly small slice of the pie. The impact on that slice will be significant. The majority of West Virginians are on Medicaid, Medicare, or on insurance that they get through their employers, and so those people will not be affected. But it's not just that these people are going to be affected, but that the move to do this on a national scale is an attempt to, in part, destabilize the already struggling marketplaces. Like you mentioned, there's only two providers in West Virginia currently, which means that people don't have a lot of choice for the type of plans that are available to them.
Rural markets are the most fragile.
Yes.
And that 70% of the counties that do not have adequate providers in this exchange, 70% of them are rural counties. So West Virginia is particularly at risk here.
The problem is that a lot of it's not just the rural markets, but it's the rural hospitals. The rural hospitals are really on edge. A lot of these already have negative operating margins. When I talked to the CEO of Pocahontas Memorial Hospital, she used the example to me that not only do these hospitals not have deep pockets, they don't have pockets at all. So any shifts to the marketplace, any shifts to the revenue coming into these hospitals could cause them to tip basically toward closing. And that has a huge impact on rural West Virginia when you're looking at travel times, ER coverage, et cetera.
And again, you're driving up the cost of uncompensated care too, which raises things for everybody. So this is an incident and case where there was sort of a bipartisan solution, or there's one that's on the table that emerged in the Senate this week. And initially President Trump was for it before he was against it. And Paul Ryan came out against it, too. I mean, this is a case of more or less deliberate sabotage, I would say.
So one of the arguments that President Trump has been making is that, hey, look, these payments are basically illegal. Congress has never appropriated the funds to do this, and that he's basically just doing what is constitutionally required of him by not spending money that Congress has not appropriated. So isn't this on Congress to fix?
Well, I mean, that's interesting. There was a sort of congressional potential resolution to this that apparently, you know, it's in doubt now whether it's going to go anywhere.
So these, Kara, these changes, you know, have already been priced into next year's premium increases. If these payments go completely away, what do experts think is going to happen in subsequent years?
It's really difficult to predict because you just see, I mean, these costs continuing to increase to the point where the buying insurance through the marketplaces for people that fall into this category, and it's people who make above 400% of the federal poverty line, so that's about $48,000 for an individual, and I believe it's about $94,000 for a family of four. And so for these people who are within this category, that would be small business owners or self-employed, they are just going to drop insurance because if you look at $48,000 and you're paying, you know, $1,300 a month for insurance, that's not sustainable for you. And so what you're going to do is just say, well, I can't afford this. And then you're going to have a rise again of the uninsured rate, which dropped dramatically under the Affordable Care Act. And so we're kind of, you know, circling back to what we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, it's a whack to the middle class, clearly.
So when the uninsured go into the hospital and everyone gets treatment, you go to the emergency room, they have to treat you.
Right.
That's where it affects everybody's premiums, because then that'll raise the cost of healthcare for everybody else. Somebody has to pay for those uninsured people to get care.
It also means people aren't getting primary care along the way, which could reduce the cost, and it's much more expensive if it gets to the emergency room.
You know, all three of our congressional delegation voted in favor of these sorts of reforms.
Well, I'll jump in on this. I mean, when I talked to you, I was at an event with Congressman Evan Jenkins yesterday. And when you talk to Jenkins, he will say, you know, I don't think that the Affordable Care Act is doing what it was supposed to do. He wants complete revolution of the health reform. They're really hoping that these moves will push Congress into dramatic action, that if they aren't what they're considering a bailout of insurance companies, that this will basically guilt or push Congress into making these sorts of changes that they think are necessary.
Well, let's talk about the other executive order, which was allowing associations to sell plans across state lines. On one hand, I've heard people say that this could destabilize the market because it will cherry pick the healthier, younger people out and leave the sicker people in these exchanges. On the other hand, I mean, living in West Virginia, you know, why am I grouped with other West Virginians in the same market? Why don't we have a national market for healthcare? Like, we have national markets for everything else. This seems like a step in that direction, at least. What do you think, Rick?
I think this is a case where a case of market failure, where a lot of different things, information asymmetries and other things that economists talk about, imperfect market conditions. So I don't think a market is a good model for providing some clear public good like healthcare.
Well, but here's the problem. Healthcare inflation doesn't seem to want to stop.
Right.
I mean, look, even if President Trump hadn't made these moves, Highmark says they would have raised rates 15% this year.
That's it was double digit before the Affordable Care Act.
Well, fair enough. I mean, so it's not sustainable. Our wage inflation is like 2% in this country, 3%. It's going to eat us alive. What's going on? Why is healthcare so expensive? And don't people in the healthcare industry worry about someday that no one's going to be able to afford to go to the hospital anymore?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of reasons for the cost of drug pricing. We don't have any caps on what pharmaceutical industries can charge for certain drugs.
And I would say, too, it's in addition, it's not just the market. It's using the power of the government to grant and issue patents that helps drive this up. And other countries and other places, you know, actually regulate the cost of drugs and what they can actually charge. And a lot, typically you might have a drug, you make a tiny molecular modification of it, you call it a new thing. And so the intellectual copyright laws, which are not created by the market, they're created by governments, allow them to keep doing what they're doing.
So I'm spending a moment here doing my best to channel Lori. Lori, if you're listening, please forgive me. I'm going to do my best. Isn't it also the fact that there's no transparency in pricing? Insurance companies, individuals, have almost no idea how much a service should cost. And with the current health insurance system, where most of us get health insurance through the government or through your employer, there's very little incentive on the individual's perspective to try to keep the cost down.
Well, I mean, absolutely. There are a variety of things that are impacting this rise. And so they could get an MRI that costs them four times as much in another facility and not even know until they get the bill.
So there's a really good book by Elizabeth Rosenthal called American Sickness. It's a new one. She's a doctor and a journalist, and she looks at all the different aspects of the system from, you know, from not just pharmaceuticals, but hot equipment, you know, the whole range of it. And like, everybody gets a cut. It's just exactly what you're saying with the pharmaceutical thing, except spread across a large area. So, yeah, there is not transparency. Also, just want to say, if you want to get the insurance companies out, then you could always expand Medicare, dude, you know. That'd take care of that.
Bernie Sanders 2020, is that what you're saying there, Rick? So, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, I want each of you to think about one interesting story that you can share that you've come across in the last couple of weeks. But first, so we're in the middle of our Listen, Sustain, Protect fund drive right now. And as we said last week, Rick, that Listen, Sustain, Protect tagline, pure genius. I mean, you can't.
Yeah, so who came up with that?
You can't pay for that sort of genius, really. I mean, it's amazing. And so we have Kara here. It's a perfect time to talk about Appalachia Health News, which your support makes possible, right? Kara, what is your mission?
When I talk about my job, I tell people that I spend a lot of time at kitchen tables hearing people's stories. For instance, I'm in the middle of a series on grandparents raising grandchildren. So I literally will sit at a grandmother's kitchen table and say, talk to me about, you know, the challenges that you're facing with raising your grandchildren. A lot of that is related to the opioid crisis. And so that is what I think I do. I take people's stories, I connect them to current health issues, and basically produce something that you hear on the radio.
And where have your stories ran besides West Virginia Public Broadcasting?
They've run on the national NPR. They've run on Marketplace, the show. They've been picked up by Medscape.
That's pretty impressive, actually, because Kara's not just telling the story of health in Appalachia to ourselves, but she's also doing great storytelling and accurate information about health in Appalachia to the world. That's what your support does. That's as simple as that. If you become a sustaining member at $5 a month, you can make sure that Kara has the gas to put in her car to go visit those grandparents and so much more. And if you go to our website at wvpublic.org, you can look at some of the thank you gifts, which include things like socks, right? You just did a shoot.
I did.
A sock shoot.
I am. I'm also a photographer. So this morning we did a product shoot for these awesome new West Virginia Public Broadcasting socks. They're green. So if you need something for St. Patty's Day next year, you have it already.
They're really, really, really cool.
Yeah,
so go to our website, wvpublic.org, or go to our Facebook page and check out these socks. And if you're so moved, become a sustaining member, $5 a month, get the socks as a thank you gift, and support what Kara does every day. Thanks. Okay, we're back, and it's Rick and me with Kara Lofton, who's the coordinator for Appalachia Health News. Your job is to go out and sit across the kitchen table from people, get their stories. What's one of those stories that is something you would want to share with everybody, something that's really unique?
So as I mentioned, we're in the middle of this series on grandparents raising grandchildren, and we are breaking those stories up into five parts, basically looking at the physical, mental, academic, behavioral, and impact, and then adoption versus kinship care. So we're kind of just really looking at this issue in a deep way. One of the grandparents I talked to is 83. She just adopted her five-year-old great-grandson. And one of the things that stuck out to me when I talked to her was she was very lively, but she said, you know, I'm hoping to make it to my mid-90s so that I can graduate him from high school. Mm-hmm. And I met her at school. I met her in his kindergarten. You know, obviously a lot of affection between the two. But just, you know, having the weight of having to make it to 96, like literally, you know, in order for somebody to, the child under your care to graduate from high school and be an adult.
How did she end up with custody? What was behind that?
There, with almost all of these grandparents, her included, there are addiction involved with the parents. A lot of times, if the great-grandparents end up with the child, it's because the grandparents are still working and are unable to take the time that's needed in order to care for young children. The grandparents I talked to ranged anywhere from 40 to, she was the oldest at 83, but I've heard from talking to other people who work with this particular population of great-grandparents in their 90s who do have young children under their care. It's a huge issue in West Virginia, and these grandparents are desperate to tell their stories because they feel like they're not getting the support they need in order to care for these children who often have a lot of issues coming out of homes where addiction is present.
It's an amazing story. You can go to our website, wvpublic.org, and you can find all of Kara's reporting on grandparents taking care of their grandkids because of the opioid crisis. And Rick, it just doesn't seem like it stops. You know, the number of deaths keeps going up too. Just kind of wonder when we're finally going to get our heads around this.
Sometimes I think hitting bottom would be a really nice thing to do in West Virginia. And so in lieu of a Bible verse, I have a Bob Dylan song that might be a good one. It's called Not Dark Yet, and the last line is, don't even hear the murmur of a prayer. It's not dark yet, but it's getting there.
On that happy note, this was The Front Porch. I'm Scott Finn, Executive Director. That was Rick Wilson of the American Friends Service Committee. And we were pleased to host Kara Lofton from Appalachia Health News, which is a service of West Virginia Public Broadcasting. Thank you both for being here.
feel like my soul has turned into steam. I've still got the scars at the sun and nail. There's not even room enough to be anywhere. It's not dark yet, but it's getting there.